Welcome to the program. You're listening to Horror Talk, brought to you by the Horrorfile digital magazine for all things scary. I'm your host, J.V. Johnson, along with Ron Bonk, and got another program, another good one lined up for us.
We sure do.
Yeah, got some good stuff coming up. We got Sean Whelan. Now, Sean Whelan is known as that guy. I guess he's one of these actors that has never, other than maybe his role in People Under the Stairs, has never really had a major role.
Right.
And so he's just like done all these bit appearances in a lot of things, a lot of TV, a lot of movie. So he goes by the name, like his email address and all that, is that guy, Sean Whelan. So,
he actually goes by that? That's funny.
He does use it. I think that's his website. I think that's his email address. But we're going to talk to him. Of course, he is Roach from People Under the Stairs. He's been in Friends, Men in Black, Star Trek Enterprise, Halloween 2, Lost, the TV show Lost, which is pretty cool, Hatchet 3, and a film that a lot of the guests we've been talking to recently keep bringing up. It's Caesar and Otto's Paranormal Halloween.
Seems to have everyone in it.
Everybody's in it. I'm really anxious to see what this thing's about when it comes out in October of this year.
They've done at least one other of those, right?
I'm not sure. I don't know anything about it.
But the name, I've heard that name before.
I have not seen anything other than what we've heard from these guests recently. And I know that Felissa Rose, who was a guest a few weeks ago, she was one of the major producers, or if not the producer of the show, of the movie, and was instrumental in getting it all together. So it'll be interesting to see what it is when it actually comes out. In our indie filmmaker underground movie segment, we'll be talking to your friend Brett Kelly.
Yep, Canadian filmmaker.
And he's got a whole bunch of credits to his name. I don't know that I've seen any, but I'm, you know, as you introduce me to these people, Ron, I'm anxious to check out their work.
Yeah, well, hopefully the viewers are too, or the listeners.
Listeners and viewers. Well, there are pictures on the podcast, so they do see something. let's see, what do we have opening up in theaters right about now? This isn't a horror film, and it probably doesn't deserve a place in this discussion, but I thought it was interesting enough to bring up. That movie Pixels, have you seen this thing?
I've seen the trailers, yeah.
It's about aliens misinterpreting video feeds from classic arcade games. They consider those feeds a declaration of war. They attack the Earth in the form of video games from the 80s, I think.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. I think my son had said we're seeing that opening day, but I might be waiting for the Dollar Theater on that one.
I just think to see the giant image of Donkey Kong and Pac-Man running through a city is kind of cool.
It's total like a concept, you know, movie where someone said, hey, how about if video games came to life?
Well, you know what I find interesting? It stars Adam Sandler, and I guess Adam Sandler's career has been a bit challenged recently. But if you notice something with Adam Sandler movies, and I'm not a huge fan of them, but, you know, they're light entertainment. Sometimes you just watch. But all of his movies hinge on retro and nostalgia, and it's usually the music. It's usually the music. Usually his films like Grown Ups and The Wedding Singer and all, they take an era of music that will invoke some nostalgia in people. And that kind of becomes the core, not the core focus, but certainly the fuel of the film. And it keeps people interesting. And I think he's probably run out of eras of music to use. Mm-hmm. So now we're using images in the form of these video games.
Makes sense.
So we'll see what it looks like when it comes out.
I recently saw his movie The Cobbler actually on Netflix. Didn't know anything about it. And it's one of his more serious roles. He's not being like all, you know, crazy and zany and stuff in it. Oops. And it was actually, it took me a little while to fully get into it. About halfway through I did get into it, so it was actually a pretty good movie. He's a good actor. He's done some, you know, he's done some great classic movies too. So.
Yeah, I mean, he's got some good stuff to his name. Usually comedy stuff, but yeah. We'll see what this one looks like. Also, The Gallows opened, I guess, right? Didn't that open last weekend or something? Did you hear anything about it yet?
Mostly what I mean, I'll follow my friends on social media because they have similar taste, and most of them seem to be slamming it. Some were going overboard. Like, some were saying, this is so horrible that we should definitely all go out and not support this movie. I think that gets a little overboard, but... and the reviews that I've seen outside of, you know, fellow friends, you know, out there have been harsh, too. But I don't know anything about it. I know it's a found footage movie.
It is found footage. And I was uncertain about that.
It does get so overdone. I mean, I hate to say this since I started off doing found footage. Well, I didn't start off, but I was one of the first guys to do found footage movies. But they do need a new twist. Sometimes when I pop a movie on Netflix and it's found footage, I just sort of groan and like, all right, I got to find something. It seems it's like hard. Every other one is now.
Yeah, it is, and it's hard to reinvent it constantly. And there had been some good, you know, following Blair Witch Project, whatever, there had been some new takes on the found footage thing, but I think they're kind of running out of
Every
new
so
ideas.
Often, there is a new one that I'll like and stuff. But a movie like The Gallows, I mean, it looks like they're trying to do another like Jason Voorhees with the you know killer in that thing. Probably would have been better served as a straightforward horror movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen it yet. Probably watch it when it shows up somewhere on Netflix or whatever. And then
cable.
I think yeah, exactly. Sci-Fi Channel, whatever. Chiller. Ant-Man, that's opening up. Did it just open up?
Yeah, it did just open up.
Now, my question is, do we need more superhero movies?
I mean,
How many more can we have?
I never really followed Ant-Man very much. He's second tier. I've seen some people bash, you know, how low it opened up and stuff. I'm amazed it, you know, did that much because, you know, who says Ant-Man is my number one superhero?
Right, right.
I don't know if anyone does, you know.
Yeah.
They've been mixed. I was a big fan of Avengers, too, but, I mean, I do like the superhero movies, so
I like the superhero.
Keep them coming.
I like them, too, but I just, you know, here's an example. Man of Steel performed horribly, right?
No, it actually did really well.
It did?
The box. Yeah.
Did it?
Yeah. That's why they're
I think it missed expectations significantly, though.
Not significantly. It wasn't maybe as high as some people thought it could go, but it did do really well. The problem with that one is it was actually criticized a lot by the fans because you got Superman basically wrecking a city and kills a villain at the end. So that sort of stuff that Superman just didn't do in the comic books.
Right.
And people didn't like the dark, muted, you know, colors and stuff, the look of it. So it had more of an issue with fans, but in the box office it did well.
What do you think about the rumors of, or not the rumors, I guess have been confirmed, but the Spider-Man reboot?
I'm all for it. I mean, I like the Sam Raimi ones, even though, you know, sometimes they're a bit too comical. The Amazing Spider-Man series that came after, you know, I thought it had some really good parts to it, but overall it just wasn't exciting me, you know, and so I'm interested to see what they do with it. I'm a big Spider-Man fan. He was always, like, my second favorite behind Batman, so, you know, I'm for it. I'd like to see him, you know, get into the Avengers and stuff like
that. Do you think, and this is kind of off topic here, but do you think that the Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire was really the birth of the new series of superhero movies, or do you think it goes back to Michael Keaton and Batman?
Oh, geez.
I mean, there's a lot of space in between.
I would actually have to check. Yeah, there is some space. I'd have to actually check the history. I mean, I would say the birth of the new superheroes didn't really come with Spider-Man either. It came with Iron Man. I mean, once Iron Man performed better than expected, like way better than expected, and that was kind of the start of the whole Marvel launch of movies.
Right.
Then it got, you know, out of control, you know, and you know, I don't know where Batman Begins came in there, but you know, obviously that series did amazing too. But you got two different sides of the coin. You got, you know, like the darker type superheroes and the lighter type superheroes. It seems to me like things are sort of shifting DC's way as Marvel has used up, you know, all their top line, you know, characters.
Right.
And yeah, they got other movies, Civil Wars and all that stuff coming, which will do mega business, but. But the edge for Discovery, I think, goes with DC right now.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I think just remembering the amount of time between that first Batman that came out with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson, and the introduction of the there was a sequel in there too, I think, to the Batman thing, but it was a lot of years. Now all of a sudden they're coming at us fast and furious.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, everyone's got their extended universes that they're doing. There's even a Transformers extended universe coming. So.
And as far as Iron Man goes and its success, man, I tell you what, Robert Downey Jr. is amazing. Mm-hmm. He is just such a great actor, and he plays that role so very well.
He does. He was perfect for it. Which, you know, another thing that people latched onto. They've been casting great actors in a lot of these roles. I mean. Christian Bale, Batman, you know, great job there. They're getting top-line actors. The superhero movies are getting the respect that they deserve. Marvel does have some things still going for it that, you know, that could be surprises. You know, like Guardians of the Galaxy was a surprise, to, you know, for a lot of people. So, and I think Guardians of the Galaxy 2 will continue to be a big surprise.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll look forward to seeing what comes down the pipe. Of course, we've got Scarecon coming up. I do want to talk about just something that we're kind of announcing, and you as the director of the film festival for Scarecon, we are going to have the Northeast premiere of John Schneider's Smothered. Now, have you had a chance to see it yet?
I haven't.
Yeah.
You sent it to me when I was on vacation, and in the hotel, the Vimeo wouldn't let it play fast enough.
No.
So. Well, but you've told me about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think we've talked about it a little bit here, but we have officially announced that the premiere, the Northeast premiere of that film will be Friday night of Scarecon, so that would be September 11th, I think at 9
and
o'clock.
Of course, John Schneider from Dukes of Hazzard. Not everyone necessarily knows. I mean,
that's right.
A lot of people do, but not necessarily all our
listeners.
That's
right. And actually, he wanted to be in attendance for the premiere, but he has another commitment, so he won't be able to be there. But I've been told they're trying to work out some kind of video feed so he can address everybody before we show the film. And one of his assistants is coming up to help us out and help show and talk about the film. And one of the film stars, Bill Moseley, will be a guest at Scarecon.
I was going to ask, because you said it has a lot of different faces in it.
Yeah, Kane Hodder, Bill Moseley, Malcolm, is it Denari from Christine?
I don't know.
Don Shanks, R.A. Mieloff, you know, it's got a lot of horror names. John Cassier, who's also going to be a Scarecon guest, is in the film as well. He's got a smaller role. But it's just kind of cool to see these horror guys. They kind of, the whole film, the whole premise is that they're kind of poking fun at themselves and the industry. You know, and I don't mean the film part of it, but the convention part of it. They're kind of poking fun at the conventions and in a very good-natured way. But, you know, when we go to these conventions and we see these guys sitting behind the table signing their autographs, you know, nonstop, it's that kind of thing they poke fun at. You know, themselves.
Did you say it's a horror movie?
Well, it's a horror movie it's a horror comedy.
In the sense
of horror movie in the sense that there's, you know, there's killings and there's gore, not a lot of gore, but there's, you know, killings and there's a killer, you don't know who the killer is kind of thing. And these horror celebrities get killed off one by one.
Oh, okay.
And but there's a lot of comedy in it. And again, the comedy is mostly them making fun of themselves or each other. So it's definitely worth it. I don't know where else it's available, but
is it his first movie? Directing-wise?
I'm not sure, but I believe it is. And he wrote it, too.
For horror.
Yeah.
But the convention thing makes sense because he probably does a lot of conventions. He probably saw some horror.
He absolutely does. He absolutely does. And he's in the film as one of the guys sitting there signing. And it's worth coming to Scarecon just for the premiere of this thing. Again, we'll have John Schneider through a Skype or something set up so he can chat with us a little bit before the film plays. He'll tell us about it. Maybe take some questions if we can get it done technically.
Can we ask him about the Confederate flag on top of the...
Well, I'll tell you the other thing. He's promised us he's going to come on the program, this program.
Oh, great.
And I think it'll be next week, actually. We'll have him on, and that's one of the questions we've got to ask him, because he's been pretty vocal about it, too.
Yeah, I've seen.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. So anyway, the Northeast premiere of John Schneider's Smothered, starring Kane Hodder, Bill Moseley, and a bunch of other horror mainstays. That'll be Friday night of Scarecon at 9 o'clock. Come for the weekend, and you won't miss anything. That's the beautiful thing about the weekend pass. Also, a quick reminder, you can listen to the program here on CNY Talk Radio, but also you can listen on blogtalkradio.com. Our programs are archived there, so if you haven't heard some of the earlier ones, they're all right there to be listened to. It's blogtalkradio.com. Just look for the Horror Talk Network. And if you want to send us some questions, comments, suggestions, if there's a guest you'd like us to talk to, or we announce a guest and you have a question, until we get live, this is going to be the way we have to do it. You can email us at talk@horrortalknetwork.com. So we've got Sean Whalen coming up. We've got Brett Kelly coming up. It's all ahead right here on Horror Talk, brought to you by the Horror File Digital Magazine. For all things scary, we'll be back. Welcome back to Horror Talk, brought to you by the Horror File Digital Magazine. For all things scary, I'm J.V. Johnson, along with Ron, and we've got a great guest lined up.
Sure do.
Somebody that everybody has seen him in something. Sean Whalen, welcome to the program. How are you, Sean?
Hey, guys. Hey, Ron. Hey, J.V.
Hey.
Sean, of course, in horror community, known really mostly probably for his role in People Under the Stairs as Roach, but
great
also
movie.
In Halloween 2. Sean, you've been in Lost. You've been actually virtually every television show in the past 20 years you've been in. Is that about right? I mean, that about sums it up, doesn't it?
I wish, or my financial means be completely different.
All the great shows he's been in.
All the good ones, anyway. Well, we had the pleasure of meeting Sean at Scarecon a couple years ago, and we're excited. We haven't made the official announcement yet, but you're coming back.
Oh, great.
Yes, yep. I am coming back.
We love to have you out here on the East Coast, up in the Syracuse area, so that'll be fun. Let's start talking a little bit about how you got into the business. How'd you get into acting?
Well, I was kind of did it in elementary school, and then in high school, and then in community theater, and then I went to UCLA and studied it there for a little while, and then I got into the Groundlings Theater, which very famous, you know, Melissa McCarthy, Will Ferrell, Kristen Wiig. So many people came out of the Groundlings. I was in it with Lisa Kudrow, and that was kind of a showcase for any Hollywood agents and things to come and see it. So I went, and I did that.
Oh, very cool.
So, so the agent got me, and then my commercial agent found me there. My theatrical agent found me there, and then I went from there, kind of. Mm-hmm.
You really worked your way through the trenches then, is really how it happened.
Actually, I was lucky because we were doing showcases, you know. I didn't have to go out and pound the pavement.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Were you pretty pretty quickly discovered there then?
Nice. When I were in the show, yeah. So I got an agent, and both agents came from there at a pretty quick time.
The Got Milk commercial? Was that like your first thing?
No, I did actually several commercials before I did that.
Oh, okay.
I did a lot of one of the early Little Caesars commercials, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know, mm-hmm. I've seen you in other commercials, but... That one
but that was one that was a big one. That one definitely broke me.
Oh, yeah, so. Yeah. I remember that one as a kid. Yeah.
Now, 1990-91, you got the role in People Under the Stairs, classic horror film. I got a lot of questions about that. But first off, what was it like working with Wes Craven?
Oh, I mean, he is so cool. He's just very nurturing, very much like your favorite uncle type person, quiet, nice. He really cared about the acting, cared about how everything that it was, you know, truthful and real in terms of the acting, and just very mellow, very low pressure, a very chill set. Mm-hmm. Great guy.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And the film itself, it's horror, but kind of horror comedy, horror satire, maybe. I'm not even sure.
I clarify it as twisted. I think it's a very twisted movie.
Now, did you aspire to get into horror, or is that just a role that happened to come along that you thought would be good and went out for it?
Just a role that I thought would be good and went out for it. Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I never aspired to get enough. You know, as an actor, you just try to get work.
Right.
And rarely do you say, I want to be just a horror movie or a person. Or I just, you know, I prefer comedy and I mostly do dramas. So.
Right.
You know?
Yep. And,
so it just depends on what doors open for you.
Yep. And the rumor is that actually you were up against Hilary Swank for that role. Is that true?
Oh, wow.
For Roach?
Yeah.
The first I ever heard of it.
Well, I was just doing a little research, and I think it was on IMDb. It said it could have been either a male or a female role, and Hilary Swank auditioned for the part, but you got it.
I had no
idea. Maybe that's
an
urban legend. I don't know,
that's
Sean.
A great one.
Yeah.
If you can't confirm it, I'm not going to repeat it again. That's the last time I say that.
I mean, the first I've ever heard of that.
That's interesting.
She didn't go on to do much anyway.
So you that film, obviously, when you came to Scarecon and we met you, I mean, people really still respond to that movie. And what do you think makes it hold up?
I just think there's a lot of things there. A child hero, mm-hmm. which is, two children heroes, which I think people respond to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the comedy of it, the quirkiness of it.
Right.
And I think that, you know, let's be honest, it's one of the only horror movies that has a happy ending. Right. I don't know many horror movies that has a happy ending.
That's true. True. Yeah.
The bad guys lose and the good guys are freed and, you know.
Right. Now, I find this pretty interesting, too. We've had a few guests on this program in the last few weeks, among them Felissa Rose and Tiffany Shepis, and they keep bringing up this film called Caesar and Otto's Paranormal Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you are part of that, and what the heck is that about?
That's a comedy film that Felissa would produce, and she and I are really good friends, and so she asked me to be in it.
Okay.
And I said, sure, why not? I gave it a shot, and... we did a couple days and really improvised. It was awesome.
And it's being released in October, right, this year?
Yeah. Yep.
Just in time.
According
for
to Felissa, but, you know, things change. But with these independent movies, you never know, right?
Yeah, it's true. That's true. And Felissa's going to be at ScareCon again this year. And I know that...
she is.
Yeah, so you guys will be able to hang out. And I know there's always a party. When you guys are hanging out, there's always a party going on somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about some of your TV work. Lost... You were on Friends. I mean, things like Hannah Montana, Star Trek, and I mean, you've—I swear, when I introduced you, you really have been on almost every noted television show.
I've done every genre of television there is.
Yeah. What stands out to you? I mean, what was some of the better experiences in your mind?
I mean, I really love doing the comedy. People on the comedy. I'm sorry, Never Been Kissed with Drew Barrymore produced.
Mm-hmm.
TV-wise, I mean, I was a huge fan of Lost, but going there and doing that was really fun.
Right.
I loved working with Damon Wayans on his show. He let me really improvise and cut loose. That was really fun.
Oh, cool.
Gosh, I mean, NYPD Blue is amazing. Dennis Franz is one of the coolest guys I've ever met. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just been crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that when you were at ScareCon, not last year, but the year before, you had to actually leave early because you were on a soap, right? You were doing, was it Days of Our Lives?
No, Bold and the Beautiful.
Bold and Beautiful. Okay, yeah. I knew you were doing a soap.
Yep, I had to leave early.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you've covered it all. You've covered all the categories, I think.
Yeah, I think the only thing I really haven't done is a Western.
Oh,
so.
Are there any TV? Well, I guess there's like a couple HBO shows or something, Westerns.
They pop up.
There aren't too many.
He's in one of my favorite cult movies. I love The FP. He was in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Have you worked with Jason in any of his other movies?
I've worked on him on most of his movies, except his latest. So
yeah,
three out of four movies I've been on. So I was in All Superheroes Must Die.
Right.
I was also in Wet and Reckless.
Yep.
And the only one I haven't been is the new horror movie. Have you seen the new horror movie?
No, I haven't. The How to Save Us?
I'm
trying to get him out to ScareCon this year, but he's telling me now the schedule might be too tight to make it out there, but I really want to show it there at ScareCon.
Oh, my God. That would be so cool if he came.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, you got to make sure that Felicia and I are on the same flight.
Okay. You mean with him or just the two of you?
Just the two. I mean, sure, with Jason, yeah. Just make sure Felicia and I are in the same flight. We always have a great time flying together.
All right, that's a deal.
Right.
Sean, I see that you've also done some writing, some directing. Is that something that's becoming more appealing to you? You're looking to move in that direction at all?
No, I mean, I kind of dabbled in it for a little while, and then I had kids, and I had to,
Kids. We know that changes everything, the kids thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Changes everything.
Yeah, sure does. What do you got coming up in the future, other than the Cesar and Otto deal?
Well, I just finished an episode of Always Sunny in Philadelphia that'll be coming out in the next season.
That's the one with Danny DeVito, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's doing well.
You going to be in Brooklyn Nine-Nine again, by chance? I love that series.
No, I'm not going to be in Brooklyn Nine-Nine again, unless they, I don't know if they'd bring me back, but not scheduled anyway.
Right. Okay.
Now, what about conventions and appearances? I know you will be at ScareCon in September. Anything else you got lined up?
Yep, I'm going to be doing Scares the Care next weekend.
Well, that's in Virginia,
right? Yeah. And then I'm going to be doing a haunted house in Alabama. After you guys in October. So those are the ones that I have lined up, and I'm supposedly going to Days of the Dead in November.
Nice. Is that one
in Chicago?
In Chicago, okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So you got a pretty busy fall, and I know that with all the acting work stuff too, that you're constantly on the move.
Yep. Yeah, always.
So what can we expect... when you do appearances with Brandon and Jan,
are those guys coming this time?
I don't think they're coming this year. But
Jan was so much fun.
Oh, he's a great guy.
We drank with him all night.
Yeah.
That's where I was headed with the question. Actually, you guys seem to be a great team and have a lot of fun together.
Yes, we are, but we get into trouble. So.
Just make sure there are no cameras around and everybody's good, right?
Yeah.
And I do
fine.
Remember you at ScareCon.
It's like Vegas at ScareCon.
Yeah, I do remember you at ScareCon being the first on the dance floor and really getting
getting
that party rolling there.
Yep, I'd love to do that. For sure.
Now, I think Felissa was telling me you guys also, is it a karaoke thing that you guys do, or dance party? What was it?
We were trying to get some hosting some after parties for conventions, because the first one we did, we kind of took over the DJ booth and had a blast. And thought, God, we should do this, for any convention. And so,
right,
just kind of help DJ and get people on the dance floor and stuff like that.
Right. Well, we were heading in that direction, but again, you had to leave because you got the gig you had to go to. So that was understandable. But the fans were looking. Fans saw you dancing that first night, and we're looking for a party weekend. But they're gonna have to come back this year to see it.
I remember him dancing with Monique and Ashley.
Right.
I think it was.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to having you back out, Sean. I don't know if there's anything else you want to tell the folks to look out for, to keep an eye out for.
You can look out for me on that guy Sean Whalen on Facebook, and I will be putting stuff out there. That's where you can catch up on everything I'm doing.
Terrific. Thanks so much for being on the program.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Good to talk to you, and we'll see you in September.
Take care.
Okay. All right.
Sean Whalen from, of course, People Under the Stairs. Great guy. Really appreciate him coming on the program. We're going to take a break. We'll come right back. You're listening to Horror Talk, brought to you by The Horror File Magazine on CNY Talk Radio and blogtalkradio.com. Welcome back to the program. I'm JV along with Ron. You're listening to Horror Talk, brought to you by The Horror File Magazine for all things scary. Remember to email us if you have any questions, talk@horrortalknetwork.com, or if you want to check us out on blogtalkradio.com, hear any of the old episodes, or hopefully listen to us live pretty soon. I mean, that's the intention.
Hopefully.
Hopefully we can get that worked out soon. We can take callers.
Fun.
You hear the
bad.
Phones ringing now? Phones are ringing like crazy. Speaking of phones, we got a guest on the phone.
Oh, yeah, we got Brett Kelly on the line. What is Brett? He came along early 21st century with movies like The Bone Setter and The Feral Man, and just demonstrated some extra, I think, not only filmmaking ability, but an eye for potentially hot subjects, in the movie industry, since gone on to make movies like, he did a remake of Kingdom of the Vampire, but like She-Rex, he did Jurassic Shark, My Fair Zombie. I mean, you're getting the idea. Homicycle, Spyfall. He's kind of like Asylum Home Video, but a one-man Asylum Home Video.
You know what? I want to hear about Spacemen, Go-Go Girls, and the True Meaning of Christmas.
Brett, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. So why don't you tell Jim about Spaceman, Go-Go Girls, and the Great Easter Hunt? Oh, wait. It's a
sequel.
well,
like you said... I kind of came along. I think I qualify as being like at the very tail end of the shot on video stuff.
Yes.
Like 1999, 2000 sort of thing. And one of the first things I ever shot was I shot on Super 8 film. I shot a thing called Spacemen, Go-Go Girls, and the True Meaning of Christmas. And then I remade it. I dubiously remade it in, 2000 or something like that. And Super 8.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, no, High 8. High 8 is the video one. The video one, yes.
Yep.
So I remade it, and it's essentially Russ Meyer meets Roger Corman meets Ed Wood, sort of. Aliens come down, and they're taught by these go-go dancing detectives what the true meaning of Christmas is.
That's a great
and surprisingly,
story.
It ties together. I every time I watch it, I go, I'm amazed that holds up as a concept. I mean, it doesn't hold up as a film so much, but as a concept, it holds up.
Now, the Bone Setter and the Feral Man, those were your first two that were released. It sounds like you're shooting on video before that. I forget, were those shot on SVHS, or were they like mini DV?
I think The Feral Man was SVHS and mini DV.
Okay.
And, you know what? Both of them were. Yeah, both of them I combined too, because I had acquired a SVHS big industrial camera from a place I'd worked that was throwing them out in favor of, GL2s or something like that. So I grabbed it and I, free camera. So So I shot them partially on those two.
They look good and, for SVHS. Was that like a 3-chip camera?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm looking at it right now. Now I have it as a decoration in my house.
A lot of people around that time, you know, at least that they came out, I'm not sure what year you actually shot them in, but the had moved on to like mini DV or digital 8. I remember I was shooting digital 8, I think, in like 99. So mm-hmm. you gave the format one more try, but you did get out there. The reason I know you for those movies is because I was selling them on my site, b-movie.com, and kind of came along. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what are these movies? I think they came out through Tempe originally. And was impressed what I saw, but I noticed in recent years though you've started to go for more of like I would say more concept. I mean, Bonesetter's kind of got that slasher thing, but with movies like we mentioned earlier, like She-Rex and Jurassic Shark, are these movies that you're basically coming up on your own, or are you being hired to make these movies?
Mostly, most of the titles you named are stuff I came up with on my own. Okay. I like high concept, and I like a title that grabs me, and if I can visualize what the poster looks like, then I know that people are going to want to see it. So right. That's kind of how my brain works. Like, in the case of, Jurassic Shark, I mean, the title, I came up with that in the shower just as a joke. And I thought, oh my gosh, I want to see that movie. And then I went to a film festival and I was doing a Q&A and someone asked me what I was working on. And just for the hell of it, I threw that title out just to see how they'd react. And the whole place kind of like all inhaled at the same time. So I thought, okay, that's a concept that'll probably make some dough. But it turns out it did, just not for me.
Oh,
as is this business.
Who distributed that one?
Well, it's an easy Google search, but I don't want to give them the press because they turned out to be kind of ripoff guys. But
you don't want them making any more money, of course.
Well, you know, it was one of those, like, the law of diminishing returns of listening to or of working with distributors, where the first time they go, hey, we love you, here's money. And then the second time they go, we like you, here's a little bit money. And then they go, who? We know you made this something for us, but we're not going to pay you for it.
That's a great, so true model right there. But Jurassic Shark, I mean, that is a great, you know, that is a great title. And I could see someone wanting to snag there. Shark movies have been so high of all budget levels recent years. And. Yep. And then the whole Jurassic thing, especially now, they probably had a resurge of interest in it.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. It pops up every year on all of these Shark Week lists, so all these big websites end up covering it. And I wish I owned it. I wish I owned the rights, to tell you the truth.
Dang, that's
but yeah,
story of the business for sure. When you're working low budget, what was the budget on that one?
On that one, I think it was only $15,000.
Oh, okay. And did you do the sharks all digitally or
practical? Yes. Yeah. I use the tried and true independent method of hiring animation students who are looking for their first feature credit. Nice. to do some animation on it. And you know, it's the funny thing about those shark movies is my theory is that what people like about them is they love to hate them.
Yeah,
definitely.
In the sense that those movies make the people feel more intelligent than they really are, I guess. Like because they're watching something that's they perceive as dumber than them. They can feel superior. So that's where I think a lot of the enjoyment comes from, is people like to feel smarter than something.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, the worse the shark, the better it'll sell, I think.
That's totally true. I mean, you hit that right on the head with that one. Now, of all your recent titles, I think my favorite title, I haven't seen all these, is My Fair Zombie. I love that title. When I saw that one, I was like, that is a great idea for a title. But what is your favorite movie, either of the recent ones or of all of them? That
Well, I think My Fair Zombie is probably my favorite.
Oh, okay.
It's high concept, and it's an idea I had for years, where essentially it's, Pygmalion or My Fair Lady, but and I feel full on musical, but instead of a flower girl, Eliza Doolittle's a zombie, and Henry Higgins trains her to be a proper lady. Mm-hmm. So we have original songs, and it's a period piece, and it looks fantastic, and the songs are great, and actually we're adapting it as a stage play. So we're putting it on stage here in Ottawa, and then hopefully other people will put it on elsewhere. And
who wrote the music?
A guy named Stephen John Tippett. He's a local guy. He's in a band called My Tiny Circus, and he writes. It's really, the right type of music for the project. So it's fun. It's really good. I was watching it at a fundraiser recently, and I had one of those Ed Wood moments where I felt like I felt like Johnny Depp in the movie where he's watching the movie and I was watching my movie. And you remember when he goes, "This is the one they're going to remember me by."
Yeah. You know, I thought you were going to say you had to put on an Angora sweater. I didn't know where you're headed.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Well, why, not so obvious. I mean, it's just the underpants.
Brett, tell me how you got, first of all, interested in making films, and then how you got started making films.
Well, funny thing, I was just thinking about this after Ron contacted me. Was that I was kind of, I've always been interested in telling stories, and I got my start in the theater, and you know, doing a lot of stage acting and stuff. And then I decided I wanted to make movies, and I wanted to find out how to do it. So I found Alternative Cinema magazine that EI put out, Mike Rasso's company put out. Mm-hmm. And this is like what year was that? Like 90? I can't remember. The movie on the front cover was Dinosaur Valley Girls.
Oh, I'm not
sure. Don Glut did that, I think. And so I was kind of going through the magazine, and I was seeing stuff that, you know, some of Ron's work and some of J.R. Buchwalter's work and Kevin Lindenmuth and, you know, all these guys. And I thought, well, I want to try that. I want to do what they're doing.
Right.
So I the first thing I took a stab at was this thing called Night Songs, which is, you know, not much of a movie or not much to look at, but it was my start. And at the time I thought the formula had to be, you know, naked girls and vampires, which it was at the time.
I was going to say it's not.
So you don't understand how, no pun intended,
big vampire movies were at that time.
And it didn't turn out to really be my thing, but it kind of gave me my start. And then I did The Feral Man and told a more personal story. And then I did The Bone Setter, which is more, you know, slashery kind of boogeyman type.
Mm-hmm.
So, and on that sort of, you know, I've been lucky. Well, lucky, it's kind of an odd thing to say. I haven't really been lucky because I've been busting my butt to do it. So, but every movie I've ever made has gotten distribution.
Nice.
So that's kind of crazy, but in a way, I feel like one of the Olsen twins, you know, where, you know, they're grown-ups and they go, "Hey, you're that cute kid from 20 years ago." And you go, "Yeah, that's not really what I'm about now." Because now people can look up any movie I've ever done, even if it's 15 years old, and find it. So
true. Even Night Songs, which my label released in a limited edition, you can even get your very first effort.
That's right, and I have to invent a drinking game for it because because it's. I mean, I can only watch it drunk, but.
You know, I like that idea. Has anybody ever done that? Had a film?
There's been a
they issue a drinking game with it.
it's almost like I think all these low budget movies could have a potential drinking game.
But actually, make the film and then write a, like, on the box, here's the drinking game that goes along with it.
I think somebody has, because I've heard it mentioned before, but I can't say who.
So Brett, I'd love
to do that as a live screening.
Yeah. So you
everyone gets drunk.
You told us a little bit about how you started making films, but who were your influences before you got there?
That's a good question. At the time I started, I think I was really into Evil Dead 2 and strangely enough, Billy Wilder, who did, you know, some like Hod and Double Indemnity and things like that. So I really love film noir, but you'd never know it from looking at what I do because I don't really use that influence. But it kind of got me into it, and Universal Horror Monsters and stuff like that, like late night horror films that I used to go and watch with my dad at midnight when I should have been in bed.
Right.
So not really specific filmmakers, but more just. You know, just more like memories of being at the drive-in and, you know, reading comics while waiting for the movie to come on and, you know, then seeing, you know, Grease or Star Wars or, you know, these things on the big screen. It seems so larger than life, you know. So just that really touched me. And I'm sure a lot of guys who do what I do probably say the same thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Of my age group, anyway.
Definitely. That's sort of the standard. Yeah, well, no, I shouldn't say standard. That's... This, I think, the thing all us underground filmmakers sort of share or have in common, you know. Now, I noticed that you have actually acted in more projects than you've directed. And a lot of low-budget filmmakers, they'll act in their stuff because they have no one else to call upon to come and act, you know, so it's like necessity. Yeah. But I get the impression you do the acting because you want to act.
Well, I used to.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I've acted in my own film since, like, 2009 or something. But when I originally started, I actually wanted to try to get a film acting career going, and I thought it would be easy to cast myself. And then I kind of got better known as a director, and I kind of started to enjoy the directing more.
Okay.
And then at one point, I just kind of got used to casting myself, and my wife said, you know, maybe you should try not casting yourself in one. And I said, well, I don't know. I'll tell you what I'll do. If someone comes in the audition and they're better than me for that part, it's theirs, and I'll never do it again. And that's what happened.
Okay.
I ended up casting somebody else because they were more suited to it, and then I never looked back. And I don't miss it at all, to tell you the truth. It's a lot. I mean, directing by itself is a lot of work, let alone worrying about what your hair looks like what you're wearing and stuff.
So hard to try to, you know, most underground filmmakers are not just directors. They're the camera operators and the mm-hmm. cinematographers, and sometimes they're even holding the boom and doing the makeup and stuff too. So, you know, you're trying to act in front of the camera. I mean, it's just a major workload, you know, to put on yourself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I was never smart enough to give myself a minor role either.
You did the lead in a few of these, I see. So, but yeah. You've done some movies since in terms of acting. Are you seeking out projects, or are filmmakers tracking you down saying, I liked you in, you know, one of your movies and casting you?
I get asked to do bit things here and there just from people who recognize me from other films or whatever.
Nice.
But I would do more of it if people asked, if people are interested. I think a lot of the things lately have either been people saying, hey, I liked you from My Dead Girlfriend, or, you know, can you be in my thing? And, I've ended up doing like one line or two in my own films if someone doesn't show up or something, but I haven't really been pursuing it or anything like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I see you're working on a new movie called Countryside, right?
Yeah.
What's that one
Countryside.
About?
Well, Countryside is hopefully a step in a bigger direction where we're trying to make our movies look more like the kind of horror film that people would say, that's a good horror film, not, wow, that's a good horror film for the budget.
Yeah.
I hate that apology that people always put on there. Right. I just want to make something fantastic. So this is a horror film about a woman who's, it's tough to explain, but she's trapped in the woods by herself. She has her leg caught in a bear trap. And she has to get out, and meanwhile there's predators of both the two- and four-legged variety that are out to get her and make sure she doesn't leave. So it's kind of a tour de force for whatever actress I end up casting, because mm-hmm. she has to suffer mm-hmm. on screen with this bear trap on her leg, and it should be pretty intense,
so
I think.
So your comment where you want to make a film that people say is a good horror film versus a good horror film for the budget—
Mm-hmm.
other than the budget, and maybe that's the only difference, what are the differences? What are you going to do differently?
Well, in my case,
the question.
I haven't done a full-on straight horror film probably in 10 years. I think all my horror stuff has kind of been tongue-in-cheek,
mm-hmm.
and that's all well and good and everything, but you know, I find that I sometimes end up on the cusp of the horror community as a result,
mm-hmm.
whereas I've been doing this since 1999. So I kind of just want to scare somebody. I just kind of want to make them feel ill at ease and say, you know what, you guys know me from the horror community for a reason.
So then is it the writing? Is it the way you're going to shoot it? Or is it the budget that's going to be the difference between it's a good horror film versus a good horror film for the budget?
I think it'll be the quality of the time and the lighting and the look. And, you know, I want to do things that make it look fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the lower budget stuff, works for hire that I've done, you know, you end up having to do it. You take the budget and you break it down to a number of days, and then you end up having to shoot it in 6 days.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like the luxury of having a little bit longer than 6 days. You know, that being said, I've made some pretty good-looking stuff in 6 days, but I'd love to... I just want to take the time and make something that will scare people and that people will just like, and there will be no need to say, well, you know, it's supposed to be funny or something, you know what
right.
I mean?
Yep. Time is definitely something I always try to seek out more and more with each production, because that's the killer, trying to shoot it the way you want it and the way you envision it with the shots that you want, and just running mm-hmm. out of time or having to rush through them to get them all. I usually rush through them to get them all so I can make sure I can cut it the way I intended.
Yeah.
And I try to get a lot of coverage, but then you kind of rush the actor. So time is probably even bigger thing to me than money, you know?
Yeah. I think it was Jared Buchwalter that said to me once, he says, yeah, you know, time or money, pick one, because that's all you get.
Yeah.
You know, and it's true. Well, I mean, it's true within reason. I mean, but you know, if it's your own project, you do have all the time in the world if you want.
Right.
I always like to shoot on tighter schedules because I like to be as considerate with the cast and crew's time as possible.
Right.
I mean, I know when I first started out, I think the Bone Setter I shot various weekends over 9 months, but now I'd never even dream of doing that because the thought of people, you know, not cutting their hair or not moving away or,
Oh, yeah.
You know, some other thing that would screw up your production. Or just, you know, people lose interest over time. So you want to kind of bang it out mm-hmm. in such a way that everyone's interested. So, yeah, I mean, there is still an element of you want to do it fast, but
I get afraid of those same things, but sometimes I get afraid if I had a relaxed set that maybe mm-hmm. the movie wouldn't come out as good. Like the fact that it's not a relaxed set and I have to constantly be, you know, thinking about how it's going to cut together and, you know, constantly on my toes, I think makes my movies better. I sometimes mm-hmm. theorize. I'm afraid I'd be like relaxed, sitting back in the director's chair and not lighting the set or running the camera and just, you know, directing the actors, that I'll get home and I'll be like, wow, this has no energy to it or something.
Yeah. Well, what's my trick, I think, is I'd shoot it tight. Like, for example, My Fair Zombie was 7 days, and it was a period piece musical. So so to do it in 7 days was quite difficult, but I try to inject humor when I direct mm-hmm. so that, you know, I'm making the cast and crew laugh.
Right.
While they're all doing it, so even though they're rushing, they almost don't necessarily, or not rushing, but, well, I guess rushing. I mean, we're spending, you know, 10 hours trying to bang out like 12 or 13 pages or something like that, and but they don't necessarily feel it because they feel like they've been laughing a lot. So
yeah,
I think that helps.
When my sets tend to be very intense, and I've had longer ones, I've had like, you know, 21-day shoots, and
yeah,
but they're... And they're very physically draining. You know, lose tons of weight and really exhaust mm-hmm. by the end of them. But my crew, my cast and crew, at least my main people, seem to really thrive on it too. When I'm shooting that fast mm-hmm. and we're going, they rise to the occasion and they bring their A game and they do an amazing job. So
I find now that I'm 42, it hurts more.
Getting up does once
just,
I'm moving.
Just walking into the car to go back home after a set. It's like I feel like an old man crawling out of the car going, oh, my God, I have to do that again tomorrow.
Definitely. I started cutting out the Mountain Dew. I used to drink tons of Mountain Dew on set, and now it's, like, all watered. That stuff was just taking a toll. It used to give me energy,
oh, yeah.
And now it just doesn't, you know, it just doesn't do it.
Hey, Brett, when you run in a lot of the same circles that we do,
mm-hmm.
you probably have people asking this question, and I'm going to ask it for the benefit of our audience. If someone's looking to do what you do, they want to break into filmmaking, what kind of advice would you give them? Other than don't do it.
Well, it's funny, you know. The equipment is so much more accessible now
yeah.
that everybody can and I think does do it to a degree. But I don't even know if I'd start if I had to start today because it doesn't feel as much of a challenge. Like it seemed like finding equipment back in the day was a chore,
a lot
and everything
more work,
everything
yeah.
was everything was a challenge to get it done. But mm-hmm. now it seems so easy. But yeah, I mean, in the regard of you have a video camera on your phone,
right?
But the advice I would say is network. That's how I got started, and it's how I continue to this day. Where I shot my first two movies, and I went to a horror movie convention, ended up schmoozing with some distributors, and I ended up going out for dinner with JR from Tempe. And you know, I think we talked about The Simpsons. I don't even think we talked about movies necessarily. And that's how I got my first deal, you know, just from showing that I was a decent guy and I could talk. And, you know, I wasn't just, you know, trying to jam tapes down people's throats saying, right. sign me.
Right. Well, that's interesting. We actually, and sorry to interrupt you on that, but we actually, at Scaricon, Ron and I put together the filmmakers networking mixer.
Mm-hmm.
With
mm-hmm.
exactly that objective in mind, just an opportunity for people to chat and get to know each other, exchange business cards and phone numbers,
and they do, yeah.
so mm-hmm. that they can connect and work together on projects. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, and I mean, that's really the way it is. I think a lot of the guys I know who are long-distance friends, I don't think we necessarily, I mean, we collaborate almost unconsciously, because, you know, I think being not so blatant about it and saying, let's work in money and this and that, and just kind of going with the flow. I guess the bottom line, maybe it's my Canadian ways, but it's just be a decent person and people will come to you and, yeah. You know,
yeah.
maybe it sounds weird, but the way it's worked for me is you shake some hands, talk to people, you know, just, you know, be decent, and then people will, you know, I mean, I don't think the Pharaoh Man, for example, necessarily deserved a distribution deal at the time, but you know, that being said, other people do enjoy it. So, but it got signed based on the fact that I was able to converse and, right. and be sociable. So
different things, I think, work for different people. 'Cause I've seen people who, you know, who are very aggressive and have done well, like you'd be like surprised how well they've done. And mm-hmm. if I went out there, said, and tried to be aggressive, it's not really my personality, wouldn't work for me, you know, as mm-hmm. for example. So, you know, I guess if people do what they naturally are, you know,
yeah.
They do got to kick themselves in the butt and make it happen, because it's not going to happen. So you're a nice guy and went out and talk, as opposed to being aggressive and shoving tapes on their mouths.
And that being said, I could probably use a little bit more aggression, because I go to, you know, things like the Fantasia Film Festival, industry things, and I just feel like I'm 15 years old and Stairway to Heaven just came onto the school dance, and I don't know what the hell to do.
I won't go up and talk to a lot of celebrities myself for various reasons. I just feel like they see so many fanboys, but also because I don't want them to think I'm just going up to sell them something. So I know what you're talking yeah. about. You just want to kind of admire them and enjoy them.
Yeah. Hey, Brett, we're getting close to running out of time. I have a couple of questions that I really want to sure. have you answer. First of all, we talked about Countryside, which is your new project. Mm-hmm. That looked like yeah. it was set up for like a 2016 release. Possibly?
Yeah, we're doing fundraising for it right now, and hopefully something happens with that. So.
What kind of fundraising are you doing?
Well, at the moment, we're doing an Indiegogo, and we'll see how that goes. It's the movie's Countryside, but it's not Countryside S-I-D-E, it's Countryside C-I-D-E, as in homicide.
Right. So if someone was interested in checking out your Indiegogo campaign, that's how they'd find it?
Absolutely.
Okay, but apart from that one, which you're still in the early stages of, your more current releases, how can folks get a hold of them and check them out?
My most recent stuff has come out. Spyfall is a James Bond comedy parody, My Fair Zombie, and another movie, which is a Grindhouse homage called Homicycle. You can find those all at Amazon and sites like that. Mm-hmm. AlternativeCinema.com has them as well. And, that's the most recent stuff. I have a Western coming out that I did with Peter Fonda and Kevin Sorbo, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
That's out in September.
What's that one called?
It's called Jesse James Lawman.
Okay.
Cool.
And that one turned out pretty good. Yeah.
Cool. Are you doing the film festival circuit with anything?
Not with that one, but I have a short called A Tale of the Bonesetter, which I'm hoping to generate interest in doing a remake of my own film. Not a remake, but a reboot sort of thing, I guess mm-hmm. is the buzzword.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm trying to get that in festivals right now.
I should know Brett was supposed to come to Scaricon last year as part of our Underground Filmmaker Showcase. Brett, mm-hmm. I know we don't have a lot of time, but maybe you can quickly tell the story about why you didn't make it to Scaricon. That's pretty interesting.
I was trying to remember that while you're waiting to call. I'm pretty sure it was something about the border.
Yeah, you were trying to get over the border, and they wouldn't let you go through with your movies, correct?
It's because I had stuff in the I was leaving from Montreal Comic Con and heading right over, and I still had stock on me, and I guess they had issue with that or something like that, which is funny because 10 years earlier, no problems at all.
Well, yeah, in your movies, you know, there's so many extreme horror movies out there. I wouldn't describe your movies as extreme horror movies. Yeah, they got blood and guts, but they weren't, you know, there's far worse out there, and you couldn't get those over the border. I was just amazed.
I think it was more that they just didn't want me to sell stuff in the country.
Oh, okay.
something like that, like bringing samples or some sort of thing, or maybe because I forgot that I had them and I didn't tell them I had them or something. I'm not even sure.
I've heard a lot of horror stories with it recently. It's gotten really difficult.
Yeah.
Do you have a website, yeah. Facebook, or anything you want people to stop by?
I'm at brettkelly.net. And Man, I don't remember what my Facebook thing is, but I'm easy enough to find on Facebook. Okay. I'm all over the place. But BrettKelly.net.
He's the only Brett Kelly on Facebook.
All right, and hopefully we will see you at Scarecon one of these times.
You'll have to ship. I would love that. DVDs out.
Yeah, ship everything. Don't get.
Yeah,
don't
yeah,
get
indeed.
Caught. But anyway, well, thank you for the time, Brett. It was good chatting with you, and we appreciate you sharing all of that with us. It was a great chat.
Well, my pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Take care.
So Brett Kelly, another underground independent filmmaker. We appreciate him joining us. And yep. I say it every time, but when I hear these guys talk about their projects and how much passion they put into their work, it's really invigorating.
Brett seems to be someone who's also quickly going up the ladder, where he sort of slowly built, was getting his name out there as a filmmaker and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But lately, each one of his projects, I seem to see a lot of buzz on them. They're great concepts, awesome posters. Like the Homicycle, I meant to bring that one up, is like one of my favorite artwork mm-hmm. Posters I've seen of recent like underground movies. He just seems to be, headed up fast. So.
Yeah. Well, it was good chatting with him. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Ron and I will talk about our classics recommendation. You're listening to Horror Talk on CNY Talk Radio and blogtalkradio.com. Welcome back to the program. JV here along with Ron. The program can be heard Saturdays on CNY Talk Radio. And if you aren't around for that, but you want to listen, you can go to blogtalkradio.com. It's on demand. You look for the Horror Talk Network. You'll see a bunch of different shows, including this one, Horror Talk, from the Horrorfile magazine. So right now it's time to talk something about classics. Let's pick some movies and talk about some things that we recommend people watch. Now, our list is growing long, and in fact, I think it's about time we compile that list and we post it online and keep a running
tally. We should. I
mean, I'm
picking the same one twice.
Yeah, well, that'll help us too. But it'll be nice to have that list available for people
sure.
as films that we recommend and that go into their must-see list. And I think I had you start the last couple times, so I guess I'll start
sure.
first this yep. time. I thought about this one because it came up during our discussion last week with... Who was our guest last week? Oh, my goodness. Oh,
Marcus?
Naomi Grossman.
No,
Marcus, yes. But Naomi Grossman from American Horror Story, mm-hmm. which, by the way, that podcast has got our highest listenership so far,
oh,
which is kind of cool. I think people see the American Horror Story connection
and
jump all over it. But in that discussion, we brought up the movie Freaks. And I think it's borderline horror, but I think it's a must-see film because it has so many implications to... First of all, American Horror Story, the last season with the Freak Show season, but just a lot of other things that we see in horror films. It's, of course, directed by Todd Browning. He was hired to direct that film right after the success of Dracula. But the thing about it, if you haven't seen it, it stars a number of real-life disabled, deformed, and otherwise distorted people, many of whom were members of the Barnum & Bailey Freak Show that traveled the country in the early 1930s. People like Harry and Daisy Earls, two midgets who actually were romantic interests in the movie Freaks, but they're actually brother and sister,
okay.
which is kind of interesting.
I didn't know that.
The Siamese twins, Daisy and Violet Hilton, pinheads, the living torso guy who had no arms, no legs.
Mm-hmm.
It's really disturbing in some ways, and it was banned in a lot of places when it first came out. Very controversial then, still very controversial, but it's an important film in cinematic history, I think.
Definitely.
So, and I think it also is important in horror film history, especially because of the Todd Browning connection.
Didn't that derail his career a
bit? It did. Well, he was blacklisted for 3 years after that film,
mm-hmm.
and he finally came back and made some more films. But it certainly became a major, major problem for him.
Yeah, it is an amazing, it's a great movie. It took me a long time to get up the courage to watch it. I think through my teen years, I wouldn't watch it. Just like a little bit too disturbing. And then when I actually watched it, I was amazed how much the freaks were humanized,
right?
And just natural people, and didn't disturb me. It wasn't the freaks that disturbed me. It was like everything else.
Yeah, well, that's exactly, I think, what he was trying to do is create the atmosphere that the freaks were actually the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the non-freaks, the trapeze lady who was the main character, and the strong man Hercules character,
mm-hmm.
who are fairly normal, they were the villains.
Right.
And they got it in the end. In fact, there was an alternate ending, which the first original ending had Hercules. I don't know if you've seen the film, and I don't know, I guess this is a spoiler. So,
it's old enough.
Even. Yeah, the freaks attack Olga, the trapeze character. Mm-hmm. And in the end, you see her in a freak show mm-hmm. because of what they do to her.
Yep.
In the original ending, they attack Hercules and they castrate him. So the ending is that he's singing soprano in a freak show sideshow because he was castrated by the freaks. But that was so disturbing by test audiences back then, they ended up changing the ending.
That was the preferred ending. That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
The ending, you know, that I've seen, I didn't see that one, is definitely, you know, pretty haunting. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Good one. Freaks from 1932, Todd Browning, right after he directed Dracula. One of the things I will say about Freaks is, one of the hard things I have with watching is the audio is difficult at times. I think they were working with challenged actors, first of all. Secondly, I think this the way
it's been a while since I've seen it. I don't remember having a problem with it, but maybe I watched on TV, I'm pretty sure.
But it's well worth the time.
Nice
one. What do you got?
I'm going to go with a non-film, a shot-on-video movie, Savage Harvest from 1994. It's directed by Eric Stanzi, who... hopefully it'll be at ScareCon as part of our underground filmmaker showcase that we do there. It's about this this group of campers. They're going into this camp to, you know, renovate it and become part, you know, of this Native American curse, you know, that it turns them into demons. They're attacking each other. It's very Evil Dead inspired. But just the fact that he shot in an SVHS, but he went for a Hollywood look, which it was one of the earliest shot-on-video movies I had seen, and a lot of them were really rough, you know, and they look like they're shot on video. They look like home movies, but not necessarily like Blair Witch-style home movies, you know, like they were trying to shoot a real movie.
Right.
But Eric, it just showed that from the start, and it's one of his earliest films, that he had an eye for directing movies. You know, he worked on the composition, the shots, the you know, the storyline, the direction, you know, the lighting, tried to make it very atmospheric, tried to make it look like a regular movie despite its format limitations. And it's just an excellent movie, packed with gore. Like I said, if you're an Evil Dead fan, definitely one to pick up. And Eric has gone on and done a lot of excellent movies since then. So
we've talked about films like this in each show, you mm-hmm. know, whether it's when we're talking to the filmmaker or it's a recommendation that you bring to the table. The biggest challenge with these is seeing them. How do people get a hold of some of these films, especially the ones from the guys that we've been talking to over the last few weeks?
Savage Harvest, I don't think, is too hard to find. I had released it a couple times on VHS and then on DVD. Those copies might be harder to find, but since then, I think Image was the company that picked it up and released it. And so, you know, there's mega units out there. So I would think, usually when I recommend a movie, I try to pick something that can be found. I'm pretty sure that's an easy one to pick
up. But it's
up
not going
to
be found on Netflix, or it's not going to be found?
No. I mean, you know.
You got to buy it.
When Netflix first started, they were running all those types
right.
of movies. Not anymore.
Not anymore, I know.
The shot on video stuff, definitely not. Unless it happens to be like a Blair Witch or something that's been a major upconverted. But Amazon, certainly. I mean, Amazon is great about carrying these titles when they're in stock. They'll carry from an independent filmmaker with just a couple titles and a major studio. So, I mean, that's usually a good place to search these movies out.
So you mentioned something. You said when Netflix first really started to become popular, they were carrying and running a lot of these.
Licensed a whole bunch of movies.
Do you think a vacuum has been created now that Netflix has moved on to bigger films, bigger releases, and there's enough people that would want to see the lower budget stuff, the indie underground stuff, that there's a vacuum for some VOD service to step in and offer that?
Well, there is and there isn't. There is still lots of options for these for the filmmakers. You know, they can go on Amazon and have their movie streamed. But the problem is getting it noticed. And there is, every so often you get someone new who comes along who wants to make a VOD, you know, site that's dedicated just the underground. Unfortunately, the audience is still too small to support those movies, where you can release them on DVD or Blu-ray or even like a limited edition VHS and do well and sell a few hundred copies. But to put them on VOD, there's just not enough of a customer base. I think it could be that the fans out there are already subscribed to these other ones, just don't have the money to subscribe to one more. It could be that once they've seen it once or they already own it, they're not going to watch it again. So, yeah, maybe a VOD company come along and have 200-300 subscribers, but is that going to keep them in business? No. So These movies, you know, there's tons of great movies out there that don't get onto these major sites, and you've seen them because you've been, you know, you're one of the judges for ScareCon. I mean, look how many movies we watch
right.
and never see. You never see them again after
right.
the film
and there's
festival.
Some good ones.
Yeah, and they're excellent
some
movies.
Really good
I've
ones.
Seen it from the start back when I was doing B Movie Fest, you know. Every year, and I'd love to release a ton of these movies. Some of these movies I've actually, you know, tried to get the distribution rights to have the filmmakers pass and then still never see the movie come out, you know, because mm-hmm. maybe they wanted the tour of the film fest. Maybe they wanted a bigger deal. Some of these guys need big cash up front because
right.
they got a lot into it.
Right.
But it's just tough. You know, all you can do is if you can't find it in the stores, it's never been released, just keep trying to search the internet. Chances are the filmmakers have put it up on some sort of VOD somewhere. Where, you know, even if it's their own site or Vimeo, you know, is becoming a growing place for filmmakers to put their movies on and charge for it. You know, it again, biggest issue is how do you get the people to notice your movie amongst thousands and thousands of movies out
yeah,
there?
Yeah, yeah. Let's take a minute. Let's extend this a little bit. We were talking in the break about trying to maybe extend the program a little bit, although we are somewhat limited when we're on broadcast radio. We aren't so limited when it comes to the podcast. Let's talk about a film we've each watched here in the last since our last program.
Okay.
What are you watching?
Well, I was telling you I just watched The Pact last night on Netflix, of all places. I don't know why I had avoided it for a while. Not avoided, but I just hadn't gotten around to watching it. I had released a movie called The Pact, which was a shot on video movie years ago, and at the same exact time The Pact came out, and I think maybe I was packed out. I don't know. But I did finally pop it on the other night. I was just in the right mood for it. And I'm enjoying it a lot. You know, mm-hmm. I thought it was very spooky. It wasn't necessarily really original. I mean, stuff you've seen there before with it. Basically about this girl. These two girls have this abusive mom, and the one girl's trying to convince the other girl to come out for her funeral. And then the one girl disappears, so the other girl comes out looking for her and stuff like that. She's investigating the house, and you realize there's like a supernatural entity in there that's attacking her, so it seems. But as it unfolds, when it kind of gets that twist of what's going on, the twist I thought was like great.
Mm-hmm.
Like I didn't know it was coming,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I thought it had some great imagery and it was well shot. I think the lead actress did an awesome job in it. She really acted really well, and it just had some really good intense moments. Not perfect, again, not super original. Stuff you've seen before with like Ghost and even just the plot line, a spiritual figure reaching from beyond the grave to try to direct somebody to
right.
something to help free themselves.
Right.
You know? But it was just well done and had some enough originality that I enjoyed it.
There's one scene in that, and I won't give the spoiler away, but I know you'll know what I'm talking about, where she's looking into the laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that
yeah,
scene?
Yeah.
Talking to her
yeah.
daughter?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the one that stands out in my mind as a great moment in that film.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. There's a couple really, spooky moments. The other one when she brings a friend in. And again, I don't want to ruin it, but they're around the bed there and stuff. That was that was a good one too.
Yep, some good ones there. Mm-hmm. I watched a film called In Fear. Have you seen that one?
It sounds familiar. Describe it.
It's a newly dating couple. They've been dating for a couple of weeks. They're on their way to a music festival in Ireland. They're in Ireland, and the film starts. They come running out of the pub, out of a pub, and there's some reason they're running, but you don't know why they're running from the pub, and. The boyfriend is trying to surprise the girlfriend. He booked this hotel online to give them a night before they go to this music festival, and they're supposed to follow this Range Rover. Or the owner or somebody's going to lead them to where this hotel is because it's kind of remote. So they follow the car. You never see the driver. You don't know who the driver is. So they follow this car. The car ends up pointing them in a direction, and the car takes off. So they are heading in the direction, and they just can't find this hotel. They keep following the signs, but they keep ending up in the same place. And each time they kind of make this loop and end up in the same place, more weird things start showing up mm-hmm. on the circuit. And I guess I can't say too much more without giving it away. I will say that it has some really good atmosphere, but I will also say I think the ending is a bit disappointing. But that's my opinion.
So. Sometimes it's hard to hold up, when you built a really good story and then the ending just disappoints.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's my hearing or what, but with the Irish accents, half the time I couldn't understand what they were saying.
That hurts. Did it have closed captioning?
No, it should have. Huh. It should have. But it's worth watching. I mean, that's the thing about like Netflix.
Where's that one? It was on
it's
Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the thing about Netflix. What's it hurt to watch it?
And sometimes they surprise me. I'll see a movie that has like one star, and I'll be out of this movie.
Yeah.
Blowing, but I'm just in the right mood for it, and I'll watch it. And
right.
And maybe it's not like a five-star masterpiece, but at the same time, I'll be like, maybe the fans are being a little too harsh on this one.
Yeah, and generally, you know, if it's got any value at all, there's something in it worth seeing. Even if it's not the whole film, there's a scene or something that's like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Genre movies tend to get ravaged by, you know, the mainstream viewers on a place like Netflix anyway. So it's hard to go by the ratings. But I think, like, The Pact had, like, 3 stars. And I was like, oh, that's good for Netflix. I need to check
now
it out.
Now you got to watch The Pact, too. And we'll see what you
I
think about
started,
that.
But I had to interrupt it, but I will. Yeah, I've heard a few people say not very good. But
yeah, I was actually really excited to watch The Pact, too, because I really enjoyed the first one.
And he left some questions out there, too. So.
Yeah, and I left thinking this really didn't, I don't know, the connections were vague, and I wasn't pleased.
I've seen it up to where she saw, like, the shadow. I thought that was pretty spooky stuff, but I guess I got to see the rest of it.
Yeah, we'll talk about it after you've watched it and see what you think, all right? Well, that's going to do it for this week. Thanks for joining us. You've been listening to Horror Talk, brought to you by the Horrorfile magazine for all things scary. If you want to chat with us in some fashion, email talk@horrortalknetwork.com. You can send us questions, comments, or movies you'd like us to watch and chat about. We'd be happy to do that, too. Anything guests you want to see or hear, we'd be happy to take those recommendations by email. Remember, tell your friends to listen every week on CNY Talk Radio or blogtalkradio.com. And take a moment and check out the website scaricon.com to see what the convention's bringing up for you in September. That's going to do it. I'm JV for Ron Bonk. We'll see you next week.